we have to create the right vibe, you know, the energy, and everybody at the organization has to feel so privileged to be here. It's no other way.
Thanks for listening to the Purely Arsenal Podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Purely Arsenal FP for all the latest Arsenal podcasts.
Welcome to another edition of a Purely Arsenal sit-down podcast. We're here to take a collective breath after that enthralling 0-0 draw at the Etihad. I'm joined by two of my regulars, one of them not being here for a while. James Johnson, how are you?
Yeah, very good. Thanks for having me on.
Top man, mate. Great to have you back. And of course, Neil Shah is back with me. How you doing, Neil?
Oh, we got James on, so I'm happy.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? Got to get him back. Almost overslept, but we got him. We found a way to get him over here, get him on here. He's in the squad, unlike Reece Nelson of yesterday. I didn't even notice that. I just checked the squad. He wasn't even in the squad, Reece Nelson. Obviously, it's not something to really talk about because, let's face it, he wouldn't have played anyway. But that shows maybe the depth of the squad now, you know, you've got players like that aren't 100 grand a week. He's sitting at home watching it like we were. But let's get into it. So, I mean, I said collective breath. I mean, the build-up to this game was unbearable from my perspective. I was just like, I'll play the game already. You know, I can't stand the build-up. It's almost nicer when you've got the games coming thick and fast. But James, let's go to you. 0-0. I think we all knew going into the game it was going to be a game of few chances, right? Someone texted me before the game, they went 3-2. I went, yeah, okay, you don't watch football. See you later. Like you're not watching Arsenal Man City this season, clearly, because that was never going to be a result that was going to occur on either end. But James, what's your thoughts? Obviously, Liverpool won earlier in the day. They were expected to win. Big game for us, similar to what was flipped 2 weeks ago when we had a game against Brentford at home and obviously Liverpool played City, but it leaves them at the top. How do you feel where it stands in terms of the title race? How do you feel about the performance as an Arsenal fan, seeing different things, everything from a great, terrific performance to a little bit disappointed we could have done more? Are you somewhere in between?
Yeah. I'm in the middle. Obviously, when it comes to the crunch like this and you watch Liverpool just before this game begins, and I always take what Neil says as gospel when he says, you know, you need to break the serve. We mentioned that so many times when we do these podcasts, especially the last 2 years when we've actually been in the running, which is refreshing. I don't think we've said it for a very, very long time. But for me, I think every, you know, and I say it in inverted commas, every realistic Arsenal fan will look at that yesterday and go, of course I want to win. But on balance, that's a very, very good point. Not just from the point of view of how we played, but also for the mentality of the group. I think, was it the 2015 year with the Cazorla and what have you, that we actually got 4 points against Man City? Did we lose at home against them that year?
I know you're talking about the 2-0 away win, though. Yeah, that was the last time we collected points there.
Yeah, so I think for the mentality of the group, that was a massive, massive victory yesterday. But Jack, it just goes, I mean, I shouldn't have done it. But last night, you know, when you get these games, you want to, you know, consume most of what's going on. So you check all your Arsenal accounts that you like. You check your other account. And the consensus is that we absolutely bottled that and we were too afraid to do anything. Well, it's like, well, hang on, because I've watched Arsenal now for God knows how many years. And when a team puts in a fantastic defensive performance, all I hear about is Arsenal are rubbish at trying to break these teams down. Now, they had De Bruyne, but, you know, all we get told is how we beat them. Well, this one weren't playing. Oh, that one weren't playing. Oh, this one weren't playing. So we finally had what I would say is our full strength team against arguably their full strength team. And we've got a guy who, let's put it right, is a record holding centre forward who broke a 30-year record held by another very, very good centre forward called Andy Cole. And we've nullified him to no shots in two games. And yet it's all about how Arsenal were rubbish and how Man City should have absolutely decked us. Well, where's the praise and the plaudits apart from Arsenal fans? And yesterday, I think Theo Walcott and Roy Keane, to an extent, it wasn't until Neville, funny enough, come in the studio that it was this whole, I think they should have done a bit more, et cetera, et cetera. But I thought yesterday, especially that second half, Jack, you cannot be proud of a defensive performance. I think that's the best defensive game I've seen Arsenal play in God knows how many years. And if you can't be proud of that, considering a lot of people say that Mikel Arteta cannot coach defences, then I just, like you said earlier, I'll quote you again, you don't watch football.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's hard when you watch a game like that, Neil, because that is not the typical way that Arsenal play under Mikel Arteta. It's not. I mean, you could have argued it maybe 2-3 years back when he first started out that we were trying to play in some sort of format that was, you know, being better without the ball, etc. But he has really taught us how to play without the ball. And you knew that if we had to play a game like this, that we were actually really, really quite well equipped and prepared for it. You've seen that in at times this season, where even in certain moments in games where we're really able to sort of nullify the opposition, where in the home game to a certain degree, we did it at times against City, though I felt like we were the sort of side that took the onus in that game and created more. But Neil, it's, I mean, with the players they had out, like James said, I don't like the narrative against sides where they say players were out. We had players out too, right? We had Martinelli would have started this game, fully fit, out. Saka clearly wasn't fully fit. We had players out too. So them saying, you know, they got Kyle Walker out. Okay, there's one for them. But the player that wanted to go up against Kyle Walker was also out. So it's a weakness on both sides. I don't take the John Stones one. He's out all the time. That's Thomas Partey. So it's the same thing. So, you know what I mean? So it's the same thing. So I think it's a very boring, like, narrative when they say, you know, Arsenal play against, you know, play against Liverpool with Salah out. We had Tomiyasu out for that game. We had a lot of players out for that game as well. So I feel like that's a silly narrative. But Neil, where do you stand? It really was an incredible defensive performance, to be fair. We'll get to like what we could have done with the ball a little bit more. Should we have had a little bit more of the ball? Was that truly the intention to have that little of the ball? I think when Odegaard speaks, you know, you understand that it probably wasn't. But the way we adapted to it, Neil, because you're going up against the best team currently in the world, treble winners, etc. We adapted to whatever was on offer there. And I thought, you know, the collective sort of back four, back six, whatever you want to call it, whole side really from the front was defensively, it was brilliant, really. It was fantastic to see, despite us not being used to that.
Well, people moan about how we don't have plan B or C. Well, there it is. Sorry, there you go. So it shows maturity. The team has matured. The experience and the attitude has all gone up different to a different level. Compared to even last season where we were flying, that's the difference. You know, James mentioned how good it is, absolutely spot on. Of course, it's huge for the mentality. The 1 point just doesn't mean 1 point. It means so much against the best team in the world where, like you said, when's the last time we got 4 points? I messaged you on WhatsApp, didn't I, last night? I said, when's the last time we got 4 points off City in a season? And don't forget the Community Shield. We've smashed them this season. We've smashed them 2 out of 3. And the last two games, 2 shots on target in over 100 minutes of play against Man City, who are the goal machine. What does that tell you about how good we were? I actually really enjoyed that because it showed a different side to us. It's not all about scoring fives and sixes, is it? It's about how you can adapt to a team who are just so good, so prolific at getting the ball in the net and how you can manage that. We were absolutely outstanding. It wasn't just a defensive display by the brilliant Saliba, Gabriel, why? It was a defensive display by the whole team. And I just felt that, you know, you were mentioning off air how many little passes, you know, players like Jorginho had, but it was probably that like that for the whole team. It was just a different type of game where I think it was set up to play like that. It was set up to maybe hurt them on the counter, which we probably could have maybe 3 or 4 times in the match. We had the better opportunities, ironically enough, you know, and then if you compare last season to this season, the BBC, I don't know, you, James, you must have seen it, actually they put a great stat up on how the differences defensively between this season and last season. And the key one was against Man City. They scored 7 against us this season, none. And shots on target, I think it was 15-2. That's the difference. That shows, you know, people say, what's Arteta doing? If we don't win anything this season, what's Arteta doing? Arteta out. You know, hang on, there is evidence of progress, massive amounts. I think we're so much better than last season now. just looking at the defensive display and the off the ball movement that we're showing. And having said that, although we were very, very defensive, just on one point, I think it was the Saka shot across the goal mouth, where Jesus just missed it. That move started with a high line. All our players were high line, and they all were stopping Man City from coming out of their own half. Every single, about seven or eight players, and even Saliba ran halfway across the pitch to help out. And he actually even started that move, I think.
It was fantastic.
And it just goes to show, you know, there were two or three great moments of football, more arguably after Trossard had come on. But, and then we've got probably been talking about Jesus and his inclusion. But I just felt that let's applaud even a 0-0 when we've played so well. Let's take a step back. It's not all about Arsenal getting 15 goals a game or whatever it is, or 15 goals every three games. We that was an accomplished performance. Yes, it now means that the title is in Liverpool's hands. And yes, they're probably the most happiest out of all of us. But I wasn't one of those people that, you know, was unhappy yesterday. I was ecstatic. I thought that was great. I was clapping when the final whistle went. And James, I put a tweet up saying, you know, you got the pundits going, but not Theo. Theo's brilliant, by the way. I love Theo. He's a great pundit. We need more of him on Sky or wherever it's going to be on. But, you know, even Roy Keane would say, yeah, but look at their defence. They had this out, they had that out. Mate, they had Rodri back, they had De Bruyne back, two of their great playmakers, which we suffocated. And Silva's there, suffocated him. All of them, Haaland, in their pocket, Gabriel's and Saliba's pocket, they shared him in both of their pockets. Unbelievably so. But, you know, they're talking about their defence was all over the place, was a makeshift defence. When is the last time that our team had a fully fit squad? It's been decades. We've always had players out, but no one ever mentions that, do they? As soon as Man City, we beat them once this season and got points for them in the other game. And it's like, oh, well, the first game they had these players out. This game they've had these players out. Just be quiet. We've had to deal with gaps in our squad with key players for decades now, or at least 10 years, I'd say. So, sorry, that was amazing. And they can't, as you said, Jack, they can't use that narrative.
Yeah, brilliant. No, it's really, they do it to get bait and reaction to Arsenal. Some of the stats, I mean, I said 57. I think it's 47 games since October 2021 against Crystal Palace when they didn't score was the last time they haven't scored at home. But it's not just about they didn't score at home. They didn't look like scoring. For all the amount of ball they had 72% of the possession. We had more shots on goal. We had more touches in the box. We had the better openings because we had two chances from Gabriel Jesus in the first half, maybe three, you could argue, where I think he kept the ball too long and it got blocked. But the two chances, you know what I'm talking about, from Ben White, one was the move of the game, to be honest. I mean, it really was. We'll get to that. I'm getting ahead of it. James, lineup questions. That the one place, I think you put your lineup yesterday and we had a little discussion because you always give the lineups, it creates a good feed off discussion. And the one place we all decided that was going to be up in the air was left wing. We knew Martinelli probably wasn't going to be 100% fit, and we didn't know whether he's going to go Trossard or Gabriel Jesus. He went with Gabriel Jesus. James, you didn't think it was the right decision necessarily, and probably from watching the game, you probably agree that you were right.
Yeah, it's one of those, Jack, because I don't know if Arteta looked at it from the point of view of he's probably going to have to do a lot of work that way. And out of him, Trossard and Martinelli, who's the best really at doing the dog work and the nasty stuff? It probably is him. So I think in hindsight, Arteta's looking at it going, he probably missed them sitters, but I don't care because he ran his ass off and he helped. I mean, Kivior yesterday was the first time in a long time where I'm like, you look uncomfortable here. You look like a kid that's been pushed off the boat, no armbands, swim back to, we're rowing the boat away, swim. Because he did, you could see there were, I wouldn't say fear, but there was definitely a moment there, a few moments there with Kivior where he was like, I'm being swarmed. Like they've, you know, they're doubling up on me. There's not enough space, help me out. And I will say he did that side of the game very, very well. But like I mentioned, I think him and Zinchenko, especially against Manchester City, just get too far emotionally involved. And I used to say it about when we had Danny Welbeck, and Danny Welbeck would play against Man City. He always tried too hard against Manchester City because he wanted to score against Man City just to prove a point, you know, just to give it twos up to them, which again is how I felt with Jesus. But the sitters were for me, and especially the one, you know, we were screaming it in the WhatsApp when we were like, just shoot, for God. I mean, Kvyat, I thought, was going to hit it first time. I thought he was going to blast it. But then he just held on and held on and held on. And that's the problem with me, is that we're talking about a 50 million striker with a number 9 shirt. Do you really want to come on to podcasts and speak and go, oh, yeah, but he was brilliant defensively? You know, for all intents and purposes, he was pretty much a left wing back in that game than he was a forward player. So that's the problem for me, is that we're talking about him not in terms of what he did as a centre forward or as a forward attacking player. I'm talking about him as, well, yeah, he's done really, really well defensively.
Yeah,
I mean, it's nice that you've got a player that if he doesn't score, he offers something else, because we used to have players in that position where if they didn't score, that was it. You had nothing. They literally did give you nothing else. But he has got more facets to his game. It's just, like I said, when you're in the running like this and it's as tight as everything, and I'm not trying to completely tank on him and the team, but he, for me yesterday, he really was just not up to the level that I expected for us to be in an offensive standpoint. And you can go to the other side and say it about Saka as well. But for me, I didn't think Saka was fully fit. There was something, even though he took the break from England, Saka still just didn't look right to me. Mm. Whereas with Jesus, I'm like, he's had a longer, more time out. You know, he's had a longer break than Saka will ever have. And yet he still sort of, in an attacking sense, looked a bit jaded to me.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at it the other way as well and say it's his first start for quite a while since injury. What is his first start since maybe Nottingham Forest away, I want to say, off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think it's spot on, yeah.
So it's a big game to come back in after a long layout as well. The weird thing with Jesus is he flatters the deceiver in a way, because you watch him and you go, well, he had all our best moments in an attacking sense came through Gabriel Jesus, right? His ability to get on the ball, right position, whatever you want to call it. But then you also say, yeah, he kind of fluffed it. I actually think the first one from Ben White, there's not tons he can do about it. A lot of people say it's like a really tame effort, but kind of takes it down on his chest, takes a shot. Oh yeah, okay, it's a little bit tame, it goes just wide, but I'm not sure there's a ton more he can do with it. But it's the other two, the one where he doesn't get the shot off quick enough, and the one where he sort of cuts back and he sort of drags it wide, which is, you just watch it and go, wow, that was a really good move. Such good work from Ben White down the right, who I thought was fantastic again. Obviously, I think the plaudits are deserved for the centre-back pairing, but I do think when Ben White was allowed to play a little bit, and I mean, in fairness, Ben White has been terrific since the turn of the year, but and I thought this was no different. I mean, Grealish was there, Foden was there, and you didn't know either of them were there. That's as simple as that, really. I mean, I don't recall Foden really doing anything in the game at all, whatsoever. I don't even recall him being on the ball. So, I mean, you know, that was, you know, all credit to him there. But yeah, I agree. It's a hard one. I do think possibly Jesus was placed there to help Kvyat defensively. I think it was a good argument that someone made that said, you know, Kvyat's not really played in a game of this level where we've won. You know, I think the last one that he started in was Liverpool in the FA Cup, and obviously, you know, he scored an own goal in that and things like that. But since then, he's had a kind of a meteoric rise into the team. And I do think he deserved to start, but he definitely looked shaky in those early moments in the game. You could argue, Neil, in the early moments of the game, that we collectively looked a little bit shaky in the sense of not being able to get on the ball. And Odegaard, I think I said pre-podcast, he kind of alluded to the fact that the intention wasn't to have that little of the ball. Obviously, the intention was never for us to have 30% of the ball. But he said, we couldn't get out. We were struggling to get out. They were pressing us really high and regaining the ball very, very well. I guess my question, Neil, is we've had a couple of big away games this season where we've struggled to create a lot. Newcastle away when they were in a sort of peak moment. Maybe you could argue Chelsea away to a certain degree as well, where until late on we didn't really create much. I wonder if this sort of pragmatism that we have, which is brilliant defensively, I do think this is an exception because of the side we're dealing with. But do you have any concerns? We've got Spurs away, United away coming up. Two big away games. Do you have any concerns that we maybe in the big away games offer a little bit too much respect to the opposition when it's a big away game? I do think this one might be an exception because the City are another level. But we've had a couple of instances like the Newcastle one, like the Chelsea one, where we've watched it and gone, it's not really the way we're playing, but we're playing in a way that's very much sort of solid, don't concede anything defensively. And sometimes I watch it and I feel like we could just be a bit more free-flowing in those games. But I don't know. What's your thoughts?
No, I'm not concerned, because I think if you look back at the Chelsea and Newcastle, you mentioned they were a bit earlier on in the season, weren't they?
Yeah.
And I think we were finding our feet a little bit with this new systems, and Arteta was definitely trying new things out. I don't know whether either of them were at the time where Partey was playing. He wasn't. Okay, but I think it was still early on, and we've only really come and found ourselves, I think, at the start of this year. It was up until yesterday, it was what, eight wins out of eight games. So now it's 8 out of 9. And, you know, even in the other competitions, we've only lost to Porto once this year, which is, you know, if you look at the two major competitions that we're still in, which is pretty, you know, which is some record really, if you think about it. So I don't really have those concerns now. I think we will approach those two games in a probably more, familiar way to how we've been playing lately. This, as you said, was an exception. It was so huge on so many levels. I think it probably was the most important game in our season, and probably still will be, even if we go on to win it. I still think this is key. Because, like again, James said at the start, it's not just about the point. It's about just the team feeling that they couldn't do anything offensively against us, and we stopped them. And we are the only team to have done it since, I think, I don't know, the last team to have not conceded against them in a whole season, or allowed for them to keep a clean sheet. I don't know who that team you guys.
Man United, 2021-22.
Right. Okay. So, you know, it's been a while, and first team to stop them scoring home in 57 games or 58 games or whatever it was. You know, that is some achievement. I think this was an exception. I think when we go on, we've got 9 games left, right, guys? I think
9 left in the league, right. Yeah.
I think it's going to be pretty back to, the familiar role of trying to get on the front foot and control that midfield and score goals. I really do believe that. And that is the same against Tottenham away, Man United away. I think we'll be fine. I just can't see it. I think this is just a different one that we had to approach a little bit more cautiously. I agree. It did look like both teams were maybe over-respecting each other. And that's a good sign for us, because how many times have we got to sit in, got steamrollered? Like, the game's over in the first 10 minutes and you think, oh, Jesus, that's it. They scored the first, then it's going to be 2-3-4. No. I think, even again on the WhatsApp, I said, if we're 0-0 at half-time, we've got a great chance, might even win it. And that actually almost transpired to be true after Trossard came on. So I'm in a really good mood. I feel like it's a win. I really do believe that. And I think we'll be fine for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at, you know, a manager that has claimed that his player in John Stones for the second year running is out injured like a day before the game again, and he's had this player pull up after 9 minutes in an international game, all planned, by the way, because you don't pull up with an adductor injury 3 days before a game and then suddenly be fit enough to make the squad. So he's planned that. He's also planned John Stones claiming to Declan Rice that he had no idea who he was playing this weekend. So John Stones has played, he knows full well he's playing against Arsenal this weekend, but Declan Rice says, who are you playing? I don't know, but I am going to pull up with a little adductor injury after 9 minutes. And then Pep Guardiola is going to say, I'm not in the squad. But my point there is, that's how worried they are. That's it. They wouldn't be doing that if they weren't worried. Right, they wouldn't be claiming Edison's fit and then not putting him in the squad. They, you know, they wouldn't be doing those kind of things. He'd just sort of say anything. So, like, you know, that's the concern they have even pre-game, that they know, you know, what they're coming up against. I think Bernardo Silva as well sort of alluded to the fact that he was like, yeah, we're dealing with, you know, a team that's very, very different even from last year, to be honest. So I think the respect's there, but definitely from both sides. Neil mentioned as well the Jorginho factor. What do you think, there's any other reasons that we couldn't? Do you think it was just they were so good at sort of regaining the ball? Or do you get a little bit concerned? I think we could have been a little bit better with our passing. I think Saka was a little bit sloppy, Odegaard a little bit sloppy, Jorginho couldn't get on the ball. But obviously you've got to give them credit too, because I thought Rodri was basically playing as a sort of second number 10 at that point. He was just sort of literally pressing everything. And it really required Rice to get back in there and create a double pivot, basically, which I thought he did really well.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're looking at it, Jack, I think you're spot on, but at the same point as well, when we played them at home, obviously they didn't have Rodri. Kovacic should have been sent off, but he got booked early. And that made him go, oh, we can't really tackle now. Whereas in this game, they were, I mean, we'll touch on the only two bookings. My word. But both for time wasting from Arsenal.
The Raya one's the ridiculous one. I mean,
yes. Yeah, that second half corner. I know I keep touching on this. But Rodri grabbed Tomiyasu pretty much by the collar, threw him to the ground, and yet they got to retake the set. But I've never, ever seen that in my life. And as much as Rodri does things that are sensational, and you can argue he is probably the best in the world at his position, along with Declan Rice, I haven't seen a sports star at the elite level of a game commit so much crime since O.J. Simpson. I honestly, he gets away with everything, this bloke. Absolutely everything. I was in awe at the stuff the one where he crunches through Saka and he doesn't pull, and he don't even pull that back.
Yeah.
Do you think mental?
I mean, just to be a little bit sort of play devil's advocate, do you think Anthony Taylor, who I did think had a relatively decent game for referees in big games, for us at least, away, you know, we get absolutely nothing when we go to away to grounds like Anfield and stuff like that. But I do feel he let quite a bit go, and you could argue it was against us a little bit in the first half.
Oh, 100%.
Specifically against Gabriel Jesus. You talk about the emotion again. From minute one, he's doing silly fouls. He's throwing the ball away. I mean, his booking, in fairness, was really ridiculous from him. You know, I mean, I'm like, come on, you know already. They've already announced they're changing the ball boy rules. You know, in order for you to grab that ball, it's very obvious now. You didn't just get thrown it. So you can't do that anymore. You can't do that. There's no need in it. And that was kind of his cue to be like, get off the pitch, Gabriel. And that's, I think we subbed him soon after it. But like you said, I agree with you on the emotion thing with Zinchenko and Jesus. But he'd made a rod for his own back there, and he said, because he hadn't booked one. And then it kind of free flowed into allowing Rodri to do that. But I do agree. Towards it, he was basically just letting things go. But that corner one is ridiculous, because they score from that second corner. Crazy.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right? I also think what doesn't get mentioned at all is Ake's header, which is their best chance of the game, I think is the best chance of the game, comes off his arm. It comes off his arm. So that header, right, I watched it, and obviously it goes towards their chance creation, etc. But I'm like, if that went in, it better be getting ruled out, because it rolls off his arm from everything I can see. Rolls right off his arm. And when they're ruling out goals for Liverpool, when someone just jumps alongside Alisson, you'd hope they'd rule that out. You know what I mean? But what was your thoughts on their chances, James, just before going in? What was your, like, they had the Ake chance, poor marking in a way, which is probably the worst thing we did defensively in the game.
Yeah. And then, I do agree with you, though. I look at it and I think, you know, I think it's being played up a bit just because it was, you know, but he didn't really know. For me, how good of a chance is it? Because he wasn't really aware to it. It was like it just fell off his body. Yeah. I mean, if that bobbled and he's got time to then strike it, he probably makes it 1-0. But I think he was so unaware with it, and Rea picked it up quite quickly. So I don't really see it as – I think if you really want to look at the chances in terms of their best one, I still think it's the Haaland one because
– Where he miskicks it.
You mean that one? I can't – I looked at my dad and was just like, he's human, isn't he now? He's become human. Because how many times have you seen him in that position miss something like that? And then, you know, there was a humongous debate, especially on television over here, about how, and I've never heard this before. It must be because he played Arsenal.
I heard this. It's crazy.
Oh, if he doesn't score, what does he offer? He's rubbish, really, isn't he? He doesn't give you anything else.
Where was this a year ago?
Yeah, I've never heard that about him. So, but yeah, and again, to answer your question that I skipped over before in terms of with Jorginho, I just think they just didn't allow anybody any time, Jack. It was a swarm. It was, you know, you're looking up and you got three around you. So, yeah, I just think they just, again, credit to them slightly, they just did not allow us any time. And I think that's a big improvement because you've seen City fans for a long time. I don't consider Arsenal a threat. I don't worry about Arsenal. Well, they definitely worried, you know, they definitely took stuff. They've seen us as a threat now. Guardiola started mentioning it. You know, they just keep trying to pump this him versus Klopp stuff, and he keeps dragging it. Maybe because Mikel's his friend, I don't know. But he keeps dragging in, well, Arsenal aren't going away. And I'm like, yeah, see, he clocked it.
Well, sorry to interrupt you. You make a great point. I think the factor is there. There are very... very, very similar types of styles, aren't they? And I think when you watch, I mean, you know, another narrative after this game was Liverpool are the most entertaining team in the league. Well, Liverpool created half the amount that we created, he had, when they came to the Emirates. So if we parked the bus, which is what some of the arguments, it was obviously a ridiculous narrative, then they parked the flipping cruise ship when they came to Arsenal. But it had holes in all the windows because we scored three still. So there's your difference, right? They had one shot on target. We had two today. They had one shot on target from 30 yards. And the goal they did score was an own goal. So there's a big difference there, you know. And I think and that's not the only time Liverpool have done it. It's not the only time City have done it. I think they only had two shots collectively at Villa when they lost 1-0. So, you know, games like that happen. The key there, though, Neil, is like sort of James touched on, the defensive unit specifically our centre-back unit, but I think White does deserve some credit too. But For me, I thought Gabriel was absolutely fantastic first half, but second half, it just felt like Haaland was kind of drifting over to him a little bit more. I don't know if it was just sort of where the ball was ending up or whatever, but I thought Saliba was really terrific in the second half. But collectively, you could take your pick on who was the man of the match out of the two of them, but it has to be one of them, I think, because they were just so good. And when you nullify a guy, like you said, Jay, who's breaking records all the time, scores out of nothing, you know, goal scoring records, etc., and he doesn't even get a sniff. And when he does, he completely misses the ball, but he doesn't even get a sniff for two games. You have to look at the defensive partnership. And I thought they were just so smooth, so solid. And I love the way Gabriel is like the nasty one. And he has a little word in his ear and shoves him and pushes him and tells him to stop being a little... Wasn't untying his hair much in this game, was he? Wasn't flowing along that goblin dreads in this game, was he? Wasn't doing any of that. So... that's credit to our centre-backs. Because let's be honest, he took the mick last season. He was 3-0 up and 5 minutes left and he's waving his hair around and playing with his hair ties. And it shows how far we've come, Neil, I think, because, you know, he wasn't able to do anything like that. He didn't know when his next kick was coming from, did he?
No, exactly. And just to talk about them, I think Ben White does deserve a shout-out because in the first half especially, he was our outlet. Ben White was our outlet. How mad is that? He was making runs going forward and, you know, he's on that, you know, gave Jesus two of his assists, didn't he? And well, not directly for one of them because then Kiwior had a touch, but he was involved thoroughly in both of them. So his improvement this season, this year, I think he's probably one of the most improved players, actually, if you were to ask that question. He's just been, after that break in Dubai, he's been a revelation. I think he's probably playing some of the best football he has with us, to be fair. So I think Ben White deserves a mention because we're going to get caught up in praising Gabriel and Saliba, and quite rightly so, because they were magnificent. This goes to prove for me how important Saliba's was last season. Said it. I said, when Saliba and Tomiyasu lost that, well, out of that game. I remember, Jack, I said it in the pod last season. I was at that game and I wasn't even interested in progressing the Europa League anymore. I was so upset after the first 20 minutes, was it? That he was off and then Tomiyasu was injured. And I thought, that's it. Our season's done. Of this stupid Europa League game, that's cost us the league. I was gutted. I couldn't even care less that Martinelli missed that penalty. I was like, yeah, whatever. And I walked out the stadium. And I cry when we lose penalties normally. And I couldn't care less because what was more damning was the loss of Saliba and Tomiyasu. And I was saying, I can't remember who I was with, but I said, that's it. That's going to hurt us big time. And look at the difference he's made. Look at the difference he's made actually in all the three. After he played in the Community Shield, didn't he? I think he did, yeah. Look at the difference he's made.
Saliba was man of the match at the Community Shield as well.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
Colossal,
And guys, you're both right. Gabriel could easily be man of the match as well. They were both outstanding. And what I like about what you mentioned about is mind games, a little bit of getting into Haaland's head. I think that's what he was doing. He really was constantly just at him all the time, in a little, you know, little mention here, a little word here and there, a little look in the eye. Reminded me very much of what Holding did to, you know, what was his name? Costa, Chelsea, for the FA Cup final. It's very similar. It's like, I'm here. Yeah, Saliba's going to sort you out, but if he misses a chance, I'm going to be there. You're not going to get a chance. Just like the first game, you ain't getting one shot on target, mate. And that's exactly what transpired. You know, they're going about this cyborg, you know, 50 goals per season, record breaker. Yeah. I remember I said in the pod, remember, James, I said, but he ain't faced Saliba yet. And look at every time he's faced Saliba, Saliba has rose above him. He's risen above him, essentially. And he's just nullified the man completely. I think, people keep saying that Saliba ain't world-class. That's a lot of nonsense. He's going to become one of the greatest defenders, you know, of this era, I think. I really do believe it because he's so calm. But he, at the moment, is lucky because he's got such a great foil in Gabriel. They're so different, but they work so well together. We are very, very, very lucky at the moment to have both of them in our team, fully fit. And I hope it stays that way till the end of the season because they are going to be instrumental in helping us lift that trophy. They really are. And I just wanted to say one quick thing. One thing I mentioned, forgot to mention before in the last question about, you know, do you worry about the away, big away games? Well, look at how well we've done at Anfield away in the last couple of years. So no, I'm not worried. I'm not worried. I think this was just a one-off because we had to play differently. So that, just bear that in mind as well. But yeah, credit to Saliba. But I want to also give Ben White a mention. I thought he was magnificent.
Yeah. Yeah. James, in the second half, we did have a couple of openings, you know, the and they were both really ended because the right ball or the timing of the ball or the timing of the run just wasn't quite right. Obviously, the Saka one, which he crosses it, and what's your opinion on that? I think if Martinelli's on, it's a different story. And then obviously when Martinelli is on, Trossard makes the wrong decision, and Arteta, you can tell from the video, he's kind of furious at that. And I think that's a definite goal as well. I'm not saying we should have won it necessarily, but again, we could have because I do think we had the best openings, and either of those chances count for a lot in terms of the data, you know, because you don't get those the right ball off, but they could have been tap-ins, couldn't they, James?
Oh, 100%. I mean, the Trossard one as well. You've got Havertz there making a very, very good run. If you're not going to completely go across to Martinelli, you've got Havertz there in the air that I would have fancied in that in that exchange as well. So yeah, he definitely made the wrong decision. But he did look lively when he come on for me. I think he did more in an attacking sense. Well, I put it in the WhatsApp, didn't I? In 10 seconds where he burst, was it Doku as well? I think he did a few step overs and then burst past him. I mean, they're teammates for Belgium anyway, so he probably does that to him on a regular when they meet up for international duty. But yeah, I in an attacking sense, he looked so much better than what Jesus did all game. But yeah, we just made the bad choices in the final third. I mean, there was a lot of stuff about Havertz yesterday. I think Havertz yesterday made some very, very good runs. There was one where he was so away and then Odegaard sadly just hit a really, really weak pass. But both of them, Odegaard and Havertz, especially in an attacking sense. I know I'm praising the defensive work as well, but they did a lot, especially when it was set pieces from Manchester City. Most of them were headed out by Havertz. He cleared majority of them for set pieces that they had. They had a lot of free kicks that were like, you know, near the sidelines that they were whipping in. And Havertz was just like, no again, which again, I credit him for that. But them two, in terms of a pressing game as well, I know Man City played a very, very good pressing game, but them two as well, their energy. I mean, there were times where Odegaard was screaming. You could see his hands were like, no, because he was going to the others, join me. He's like, you know, they're swarming us, let's swarm them back. But I think he was the only one that really committed to it full. You know, I'm going to fully press. And but no, I had no real qualms with it. But yeah, we just made some very, very bad choices. But it's not like how we were before Christmas, where it was like, no, we're not creating anything. And if we don't take this, I think come Tuesday, you're going to ask in a minute what the predictions are going to be. But I think we're going to be fine. I can't see, as much as I think Luton are improved compared to what they were before, I can't see us not going back to our regular, you know, the regular scheduled programming with Arsenal. I'm not saying it's going to be five or sixes, but yeah, I don't think that we'll be as cagey or make that much mistakes in the final third. I know there was a few that thought, oh, you know, after we got that big point away at Anfield, we then had the West Ham game and the Fulham game where we were dreadful. I don't see that kind of slip happening here. I think we're on job, and we'll be fine.
Wednesday as well, Wednesday. But yeah. But
is it Wednesday? Oh, I thought we were playing Tuesday night.
No, we've got to be Wednesday because it's a Sunday game, isn't it? I mean, I can't recover in that time, and I was only watching. So it better be Wednesday. No, I think it is Wednesday. Yeah, I think it's Wednesday.
Yeah, so. You're right. I've just clicked it. Yeah, sorry, Wednesday.
Yeah. There is games Tuesday, though.
So yeah. I'll tell you what, that's another point. I bloody hope Real Madrid skin them because I can't take two more legs of that.
No, I know. I don't think the neutrals can.
And Liverpool will be, you know, they'll be rubbing their hands if we've got to play them twice again.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, we've got to get past
that. They'll be just as intense as that game was.
Oh, yeah, big time. Yeah, I mean, it's these games are never classics, especially since we've got very, very good at defending, because I do feel like these teams just match up very well in terms of, you know, they nullify. I mean, Liverpool's all about creating chaos, so it's you rarely see games like this, because to be honest, they can't play in this way, so that they won't play in this way, you know what I mean? So when they came to the Emirates, they try to play open, and they got it handed to them. So, like, that, you know, that's true, though. They can't really play. They're not going to play in a defensive way, or in a counter-attacking way like that, because that's not really their style, is it? But Neil, just to go on, a couple of things. What did you think about the substitutions and the timing of them? I was a little surprised Partey and Tomiyasu were the first ones, but in hindsight, I do kind of understand why Jorginho was kind of less effective than usual in the game in terms of his build-up play and getting on the ball. I think they really focused on just trying to be really press, you know, harass him as much as they could, not let him get out. So he often had to play the ball backwards, or we just couldn't give the ball to him. And when you see Jorginho doing those backwards runs where his arms and legs go all over the place because he can't catch someone, which he did in about the 50th minute, you can tell that's the time to get Jorginho off. He did it against Porto in the home leg. I don't know if you remember. He started doing that, and then Martinelli and Ramsdale kind of laughed at him. And that, I think that's his signal to the bench that I'm done now. My calves are gone, kind of thing. And I saw it and I was like, yep. Get him off. And then we got Partey and Tomiyasu. What were your thoughts on their performances, Neil? Because those are the two kind of players that we are going to need at some point in this running. Two players that you could arguably say were starters at this point last season. And that's how much the squad has progressed. Because now starters from last season are now, you know, coming on as bench options. You know, we're not looking at younger players necessarily. But how important do you think that was? And how do you think they looked? I thought Partey looked less rusty than we saw 2 weeks ago, to be honest. He looked a little bit more comfortable on the ball, a little bit fitter. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, no. I firstly agree with the substitutions, because Kiwior wasn't, I think he just was a bit overwhelmed, I think, on the occasion, I think. And like James said right from the top, I think I wasn't happy with Jesus. I was of the mindset where I was screaming that, look, this formula is working without him, very much like it was last season. And then he's fit and then he comes back in and I think he unbalances the team a bit. And I was upset that he started. I would rather have had, you know, Trossard, or Martinelli obviously couldn't because of, you know, he's coming back from an injury, but I would have rather seen Trossard there and just kept it as it was. But it is what it is. But I think with hindsight, James, you're right. He was helping Kiwior out a lot because I think Kiwior was a little bit overwhelmed. And I think that's probably the right substitution there to bring Tomiyasu. But like you said, it's twofold, not just to give Kiwior a breather from that experience, but also to give Tomiyasu some much needed minutes because of what you said. You know, we got games sometimes two in the space of maybe 6 days, given the Champions League that we're still in. You know, it's going to be a tough ask just to keep the same 11 or 12. We're going to need 14 and 15 at least to be playing and being rotated. So I think that was a good thing to do. I think out of the two, you're right. I think Tomiyasu was probably a little bit more rusty than Partey was. I think Partey was fine, by the way, because but that great move, that great assist from Odegaard, what would have been an assist if Trossard scored, that move started from Partey. So he's already forward thinking. He's doing what we're used to seeing him do, boss the midfield and then, you know, go progress with the ball going forward. I thought he looked fine. So out of the two, I think Partey looked more comfortable, which is fantastic because Jorginho, see, I think Jorginho, the reason why I really like Jorginho, I think he knows his limits as well. Like you said, when he knows it's time to come off, he's not going to overburden the team and you know, mess things up. He's going to say to the bench, right, get me off, I'm done. And I think Jorginho's always been a better player with the ball rather than off the ball. When he's chasing, he's not so good. When he's with the ball, he's fantastic. And I'm not going to criticise Jorginho. I think he's a tremendous signing. And I think we need to keep him for another year, by the way. I don't want to get rid of him. He's a fantastic player. So I agreed with the substitutions. Yeah, all right, Kiwior a bit looked a bit rusty, but there was no way no one's getting past our defence yesterday. So I wasn't overly worried anyway. And I'm just glad to see them both get time because they're going to be called into action, I think, very, very soon. And you're right. How great is it that two starters are now coming off the bench and we're doing so well? Our depth has improved brilliantly. And we were worried, weren't we, where there was lack of transfers in January. I don't feel that we're missing anyone now at the moment, to be honest. So I was pleased with it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. James, the Rodri Rice debate went on a lot before. Both players talked quite a lot before the game. A couple of great little challenges and contests in there between them both. And what were your thoughts on that? Obviously, Rodri had a lot of the ball, but usually Rodri in games like this where it's sort of stalemate, he's the guy that usually pops up with a goal. You saw him go forward once and get a little header in and it went wide. But I thought we nullified him quite well, especially second half. And I thought Rice was a big part of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think quite like a lot of our players, they grew into the game. They got better as the game went on. And there was the bit that's being shared on Twitter a lot, isn't there, of Declan Rice, where I think he's got like four or five around him and he manages to just do a little turn, run this round. And that's what his game is. That's what I love about him, is that he, for me, he gives you everything that Rodri does, but he can also drive with the ball, which makes me think that he's just that marginally bit better. Because really, you're getting two players in one with Rice, because he can do what everyone else can do at the six, but then he's just as good as an eight. So you're really, you know, utilising a player with two positions. And I think yesterday, it was two sixes next to each other. And I think, yeah, he sacrificed probably his more attacking game where he's been getting goals and everything for a more defensive game, a bit like everybody else. I mean, Bernardo Silva, after the game in his interview, he just said, like you were talking about earlier, this is not the team that we played last season. He went, the progression in a year from them is unbelievable, because he went, again, just as much as we were trying to occupy spaces, they've got two there, they've got three there, and it was just, we couldn't break them. You know, he admitted we couldn't break them down. It was just everybody else, for whatever reason, doesn't want to credit an Arsenal side that didn't break down. It makes me laugh because, okay, say we went there and we tried to play football and we hold three or four, we'd just be called typical Arsenal, they're idiots again, wouldn't we? So you can't win with this lot anyway, so there's no point trying. But yeah, no, I thought Rice you know, it, again, didn't get as much of the ball as what you probably wanted. But yeah, I had no qualms with how Declan Rice played yesterday at all.
No,
and he's another one. He's going to be massive because, again, like Neil said, if you lose Saliba or even if you lose Gabriel at the moment, you don't get to play that high. You know, we will drop another 10 or 15 yards back. And I think that invites teams to come and have more of a go. You know, you could see it when Holding come in last season. They had the, within like two games, the channels had, oh, this is Arsenal's average position when Saliba's playing when they're in defence. And this is it with Rob Holding. And it was like, yeah, we've gone back another 25 yards because he can't, you know, these players are just as good on the ball as they are to Mikel. I've got to give big credit to Edu as well, because the recruitment of these players, I mean, years and years ago at Arsenal, instead of good old Arsenal or we've got North London forever now, you could have played Hi-Ho from, you know, Snow White, because we went for that Barcelona. We, as much, again, Arsene Wenger, as much as I love him, got to critique him. He saw that Barcelona, I'm going to have 5'6", intricate, tippy-tappy play. You can't do that in England. You cannot do that in England. The departure from what he did in 98 and 2000, where he had big, statuesque men, you know, when teams come in the tunnel and they looked and they were like, oh, bugger, I've got Vieira, I've got Henri, you know, they're big players. And now I think we used to laugh about it, didn't we, Jack? He's obsessed with the stature. Well, every single one of them, you know, other than Jorginho, who's not the tallest, but they all, you know, they can all hold their ground, which is exactly what we did yesterday.
Yeah. We're not being bullied anymore, guys. We're doing
exactly
the bullying.
Exactly.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
And what was really good was that when they had more possession, we dropped deeper. We just didn't panic, you know. Even there was points where they had the ball in and around the box, and they were you could tell they were looking for a little nick or a foul or something to just drop to the floor, and we just didn't panic. We just stood. We stood up to them. If they turn, we turn with them, and we just didn't make errors. We just didn't make errors. You know, we weren't making any silly errors. We weren't, you know, and like Mikel said at the end of the game, you know, if you can't win it, you've got to be able to lose it. I thought his, you got to make sure you don't lose it. And I thought his quote about, they went, how do you cope with being without the ball for so long? And he went, well, you've got to make sure you've got players that love to defend and are willing to watch 30, 35 passes without losing focus on what their job is and stuff. He said something like that. And I was like, well, that's really interesting, you know, because not every player is like that, right? I mean, you've got to really make sure you've got the right type of player. It doesn't matter how good you are on the ball. We've had players in the park great on the ball, but they without it, they go absolutely no. Aaron Ramsey was one of them, right? On the ball, going off the, if you're going forward, Aaron Ramsey, bust a gut. You're going backwards, he wouldn't be anywhere to be seen, would he? And that was the problem, you know? And we've had players like that before, but it's amazing to get a collective unit that's just so disciplined in that sense, but at the same time can do the opposite of the game when it's, you know, there for him and there for the taking. I think he missed one trick. In hindsight, I think the one issue I had with his substitutions, if I was to look back at it now, was when he did bring Martinelli on, he should have played him on the left. I don't understand. I've never, ever seen Martinelli play well on the right under Mikel Arteta. Tell me if I'm wrong. And I think he should have just moved Trossard over there. If he was going to take Saka off because he got fatigue, he should have just moved Trossard over there, because right back was Rico Lewis and he there was gaps. I mean, look at the chance Trossard had, for example. There was gaps. And I think, I can't even recall Martinelli really touching the ball. And I felt we missed the trick there. If we were going to have one sort of outlet, it should have moved him out to the left. And I felt that.
Well, I put in the WhatsApp, didn't I? I was like, oh, is he going to put Martinelli down the middle? Because I thought to myself, maybe, you know, Havertz, when he come to the show, he was a right winger. So, you know, for Leverkusen, all his best games and everything that got him the move basically was what he did on the right hand side. So there was part of me that thought, oh, okay, you're going to shift Havertz out there so that when Raya does get the ball, he can ping somebody and either he can turn and lay it off to Martinelli to run, or he can run and then lay it off to Martinelli himself. But yeah, I'm with you. I'd never play him on the right-hand side. For me, Martinelli's either on the left or he's got to go down the middle. I do believe eventually, fingers crossed it's for our club, but I think eventually this guy's going to go down the middle. And just as much as we wax lyrical about Haaland, I think this guy is going to be an absolute goal scoring machine when he finally moves down the middle.
Yeah,
I just hope it's for our club.
Yeah. Hopefully. Yeah. It was an interesting, that one was an interesting one, but also, you know, you could tell by the timing, he probably wasn't fully fit or hadn't trained enough to be fully fit, one or the other. So hopefully there's a start there for him on Wednesday, you know, hopefully.
Oh, he'll go back. Yeah. He'll destroy on Wednesday. You watch.
Yeah, fingers crossed. But look, we've got 8 points out of 12 against the top three, City and Liverpool. You know, undefeated in terms of those games. So I think people, you know, I heard like you, Gary Neville, saying, "Yeah, you know, you don't know if this is until the end of the season." He said, "You know, Arsenal need to go and win to win the league today." I think a few other Arsenal fans had said that. Neil, where do you stand on that? Personally, my personal opinion on that is, you know, if we don't win the league, it's not going to be based off the fact that we got a point and not three at the Etihad. I think that's a ridiculous assumption. It might be based off the fact that you lost at home to Fulham, or you know, you didn't beat West Ham at home. You could look back at those games because those are games that you really should win. Sorry, you lost away to Fulham, but you're not going to look back at the fact that you picked up a point at Anfield rather than three, or you picked up 1 point at the Etihad. I think that's a ridiculous way of looking at things, especially when you look at it when Man City have picked up, you know, I don't think they've won against the top six, have they, this season, or top five, sorry, this season? I don't
think
they've won a game. Yeah, they've not won
a game.
Liverpool haven't won away against City, lost the way to us.
We're top of that league.
Lost the way to Spurs, yeah. So, I mean, it's not based on games of teams around you in the top of the league. That's not going to be what it's based off of.
No.
So, but I guess my question, yeah, Neil, is where do you think it leaves us? Where do you think it leaves us in terms of the title race? Obviously, we've dropped down second. It's now fully in Liverpool's hands. They have the easier running on paper. They also have, you know, they don't have Champions League football. So the fixture list is the kindest to them. So you'd argue this is probably a really sort of good weekend for them, but it's 9 games to go. So what's your thoughts?
Well, yeah, they are the winners of this weekend. You can't, you know, when they played Man City and they drew and we won, we were the winners, weren't we? It's swapped. I look, if Liverpool go and win their last 9 games, there's nothing either City or us could do anything about it. There's nothing we can do. If they do that, that's it, done, job done. Doesn't matter if we win all our games, if we score another 100 goals, it don't make any difference. If they get through 9 1-0 wins, they win the league. It's as simple as that. But you know, I think there's more twists and turns to come. And I think they were saying either on Sky or Match of the Day, they were saying that it's going to change literally every week. It's going to keep manoeuvring. And I don't mind being not at the top. I always find that when we're at the top, there's a certain expectation and there's more pressure. I don't mind just being a little bit below and then, like, you know, maybe the last 2 or 3 games, we just do the business. And look, we got Everton at home as the last game, 1998, just ringing to me. It's just singing my tune.
We're
going to repeat, and it will be the last goal will be, you know, it'll be a pass from Gabriel to Saliba running up the front, and it will just do a Tony Adams. That's all I can see. That's my vision against Everton at home. It'll be magical. Trust me. I look. I think we've got as good as chances as Liverpool and Man City have got. I don't think it means anything at the moment that they're 2 points ahead. It really doesn't. I don't really see Liverpool winning 9 games in their remaining 9 games. Could happen. Football's a funny game. Just can't see it. They have got arguably the easier running, but they've got some tough games as well. And all of us, ironically, have all got to play Spurs. That's
the tough thing there is Spurs will happily roll over 7th for against Liverpool. So, you know,
probably
that's going to be Liverpool's easiest game of the season. So that, I think that's the problem there, you know.
I know. But it is ironic that, you know, it could be them that it could work the other way around. They could do us a favour. You just don't know. That would be the weirdest thing, wouldn't it? That would be the irony of it all. But I think we've got as good a chance as any guys. And I think we'll be fine. In what we do, we can only focus on what we do, and I think we'll be fine in doing what we do. And the other thing is, I forgot to mention one thing we didn't say, that as good as the defensive performance was physically, mentally, how good were we to focus like that? Like you said about the 30 passes thing, Jack, the fact that they've got to keep their focus for the whole duration of, you know, 95, 96 minutes, that's incredible. That's an achievement in itself against a team like City to do that. Yeah. You know, we have grown so much in these last few months. It's unbelievable. And like you both said, it's a testament to Arteta and Edu and the coaching staff. It's been amazing.
takes a certain type of player. And we talked about taking emotion out of the game and bringing more control to the team. And that's where sort of the question marks come in about Gabriel Jesus and Zinchenko didn't even get on for this game. And I think part of that was probably game state, but I think part of that might have been down to, you know, he gets too emotional, especially at the Etihad. He just gets too emotional, and we're trying to remove that from the team. And it's a different type of emotion when Gabriel is nudging in Haaland's back and saying, yeah, you want it again. That's different because you can tell he's even keel. He knows how to control it. But when Gabriel Jesus is bickering for the sake of bickering and throwing balls away for the sake of it, and just it excess energy, and it riles things, and it's just unnecessary, you know. And there's a way of doing it, and I don't think it helps his game either. Well, you know, certain players, they feed off of that, and you can tell with Gabriel Jesus it doesn't help him. And I think it's Zinchenko's the same to a degree. It doesn't really help him. So we're trying to remove that. That's why Ramsdale was dropped, I think. You know, there's a lot of that sort of excess emotion, and we don't want that from a goalkeeper. And I think that's part of the reason that Raya was there. But yeah, I agree with you. Neil, it's a long way to go. It's quarter of a season, roughly, you know, left. So it's really hard to judge anything too much. I mean, we've been third favourites across the season, really. So it's not really changed as such. James, where do you think it leaves us?
Yeah, I think obviously Liverpool, like you said, they've won the weekend. They're in the pole position now. But I do agree with what Neil said in that I don't think they're going to win all of their remaining games. They might not lose them, but I don't think they're going to win them. And I feel the same for us, and I feel the same for Man City. So you just got to watch and see how it goes. I mean, the big consensus from everybody that was yesterday was, oh, you know, we've seen Man City go on a 9-game run where they've won everything and we've not seen any of the other teams do it. Well, I was like, well, hang on a sec. If we scored yesterday at the Etihad, we'd have just gone 9 games. So, we you know, what are you talking about? You know, we're currently 9 games undefeated. So, you know, we've shown that we can go 9 games without losing. We got 9 more. Do I think we're going to win every single one? Probably not. But I think it's just a case of you just got to keep, you know, just every week, you just got to keep knocking on that door, let people know you're there, and take it a game at a time.
Yeah.
And just see where it goes. And I do agree with Neil as well. We're better as a chaser than we are being on top, because we've shown that last year when we were on top and everything else, we didn't get it over the line. So I think we're better at chasing. And there's always this stuff about, every time Arsenal are on top at Christmas, I think it's since the 30s, we've not won the league when we've been top of the table when it was Christmas. But we keep breaking records on the daily with this lot. So I'm not worried about that anymore. I think we can put that to bed this season. And yeah, I really think we're going to have a go. We're not going away, which is the big, big takeaway from, you know, we've had 20 years where we've barely been in the conversation. And now for 2 years running, we are reducing these margin, you know, it was like a chasm before, but we've really, really reduced, you know, it's borderline on, it's a Rizla paper's length now. So I've got no problems whatsoever. And like I mentioned earlier, just get back on track on Wednesday, we've got the +6 goal difference. That, I mean, Liverpool got Sheffield United. So hopefully they don't hold about 9 or so again, like they did against Newcastle.
Well. They could well.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, we've got that +6, so we just need to run that up against whoever we play. I mean, Brighton afterwards, they're not going to be anywhere near as bad as they were against. I watched part of that Liverpool. They were terrible. Worst I've ever seen Brighton play, especially under De Zerbi. They looked bereft of anything when they got the goal early, but after that, like we said earlier, they were just under a swarm. I was surprised Liverpool didn't rack that goal difference up yesterday. So, but yeah, no, we'll be fine. We're going to win the league. We're going to win the Champions League. Don't panic.
So let's go on to Luton then, Neil. It's Wednesday. Obviously, they gave us a hell of a game when we played them at their place. We managed to come away there with a last-minute Rice winner. But, you know, fingers crossed, it's, you know, we can win this one. What changes do you see for Wednesday? Because obviously now it's a game every 3 days. So now is where the squad really, and how Arteta uses the squad, really starts to become you know, apparent, like who he trusts and whatnot. And I think we know the players that he trusts, but we don't really know the ones he's willing to start. You know, there's a little bit of a difference as game state changes as opposed to ones that are going to start. So do you see changes, if any, midweek? Then we've got, you know, it's Luton and then it's Brighton and then it's Bayern. It's pretty relentless. And the frustrating thing from a European side of things, which I do agree with Pep on this a little bit, is, yeah, it's incredible how other European teams get their fixtures catered to them to try to do well in Europe. You know, they incredibly, these countries want their teams to win in Europe. Whereas in England, they seem to literally ruin you in terms of fixtures leading into European ties. I mean, Real Madrid have like no games from now until, or maybe one, and from now until the City game in 9-10 days' time. And I presume it's the same or roughly the same for Bayern.
It's to do with TV money, Jack. That's all it is. Because literally no one else, as much as these teams in these countries have supporters, no one really wants to watch anyone other than Real Madrid. But, you know, especially when they're selling it abroad, no one cares about Cazids versus, you know, Mallorca or whatever. They want Real Madrid or Barca. So, yeah, that's why they keel over. Plus, their coefficients are getting less and less because England's are going up. But then I'm with you. I think you should look at it and, you know, especially the Premier, you'd want as much English teams in Europe because that's additional money for the Premier League as well.
Yeah, but yeah, it's a very strange one. So
it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. And I always think, you know, Bayern basically being pointless than playing in their league at this point. They know they're not going to win it. That's a very dangerous team to deal with because, you know, we've seen in Europe in the past, you know, look at the English teams, Liverpool, Chelsea, whenever they've won in Europe, they've not won the title the same season. Oftentimes, they've not even been in with a chance. You know, you look at Chelsea's last one, I don't think they were near the title. You look at Liverpool in 2005, they weren't even in the top four. So, you know, oftentimes these teams, when they're just able to just focus on one game coming up, when you know they've got the squad to do it, they can be far, far more dangerous than teams that are playing week in, week out to try to fight for something domestically. But Neil, sorry, I ran off track, but what's your thoughts on Luton? Any changes that you'd make and what's your scoreline for the game?
Yeah, I think there may be a couple of changes. Look, I always say every time that I'm worried about Saka needs a rest, but then he ends up coming back and plays anyway. So it's a 50-50 with him. It depends on how injured he was or how fatigued he was. I don't know what the reason is. It's probably more fatigue with him because he's made of iron, that kid. But, you know, there potentially could be a change with him, but will that happen? Not sure. But I think because I thought Partey was pretty sharp, he may start. I don't know, but he may start ahead of Jorginho. I don't want too many changes because I think the team's doing well. Kiwior, I was saying that he shouldn't. I don't know in the WhatsApp group, I don't know if you remember, I said maybe it's senior Tomiyasu, but actually, I don't know if that will help him mentally. I think he may continue with Kiwior at the back, actually. He might do. It just depends. You see, it depends. It wasn't just a physical demand yesterday. It was a mental and emotional one as well. So I think it depends. He maybe assess all the players and see how they all are. I mean, I just think we're just so hardened now. I don't think that should be an issue, but let's see. But I think there'll be no more than two or three changes, potentially Saka. I think Partey for Jorginho. I think he does need time because we need to get Partey really up and running as quickly as we possibly can. Maybe a change for Kiwior, but I'm not sure about that again. So I'd say no more than two, three. It's my prediction. Luton were very, very difficult at home, but they've given other good teams a run for their money at their ground. I think it'll be a very different game for them at our place. I think we're going to be so buoyant from that defensive, awesome defensive display that I think we're going to win, run of 4-0 winners, to be fair. Yeah, I think it's going to be three or four. I'm going to go with four, and I'm going to put my money on Odegaard scoring the first goal. So it'd be 4-0 Odegaard. And you know what? Just very quickly before James's prediction, you know what I loved about the teams in the interviews afterwards? The players afterwards. They were unhappy with a point, and I love that. Despite how good we were defensively, they were unhappy with a point. They're saying, no, we wanted three. Saliba said it. Odegaard said it. I think a couple of others might have said it on their social medias that, no, they were not satisfied. That suggests to me the hunger that this team has and the desire to win this league. So that can only be a good thing for us.
Yeah, I heard Saliba say that. Like that a lot. And liked his interview with Odegaard. Yeah, love that. James, what's your thoughts? You agree with the changes from Neil? And what's your scoreline?
Yeah, I think Saka might sit this one out. And I did say as well, when I put, you know, I said, you're going to ask me this question. So I think Partey might start as well. And then left back's a very, very interesting one, because now Luton have gone to 4-3-3 instead of 4-4-2. So there's not really, you know, they don't normally go for that aerial bombardment and everything. They're sort of playing a bit more. So I think if they're going to stick with the 4-3-3, I think Tomiyasu might have come in if they were to do the two, because they're just going to aerially try and dominate you. But I don't think that's going to be the case here. So I think Kivior will stay. And I wouldn't shock me if he went for Tomiyasu against Brighton, because they've got pace on the sides. So I definitely think that rotation is going to happen, but I don't think it's going to happen here. But yeah, I think Jesus will probably start on the right-hand side. Martinelli will go back on the left, and then Havertz obviously stays up front. And yeah, I think Jorginho will be rested for Brighton, and give you, and the back four will stay as it is, and obviously the goalkeeper. So I don't think there'll be wholesale changes, but I think it'll be enough to be like, okay, I understand what's going on here, and we're utilising the squad. Like you said about the confidence of the players that are already in, you do need to boost up the squad, because we're not going to win. We're not winning anything unless these squad players turn up. So as much as I love our first 11, I'm looking at these people, you know, who's going to stand up here and be counted? Which one of you lot want to be a hero as well? Because I've got no worries really about anyone in our first 11 anymore. My worry is about when we want to change it and who they are when they come in. But yeah, I'm going to be a bit more conservative than you. I'm going to go for a 3-1, but I still think we're going to win it. And I'm going to back... Yeah, I'm going to back Jesus to score. I think he needs it. So, yeah, I'll back him.
Yeah. Love it. All right, love it. I'll take either of those scores. Yeah, I do. I mean, if Partey does start, it's a big one for him. Because if he starts and plays well, puts himself in contention for one of the Brighton and the Bayern games, I think it's, you know, as good as Jorginho's been, I do think that's possible with the quality he's got if he plays well, you know, because he does offer us something really different in terms of his fast moving ability to play vertical passing and things like that and drive a little bit more with the ball. But yeah, so it's a big, big moment for him if he does start. Very, very big. I think we might make a fullback change, but I do agree with you. He may not go against it. I'm just looking at the accumulation for Kivior. 120 minutes he played international, then he came back in, but we brought him off early, so that might be in consideration for the next game. So yeah, but I think maximum three changes, like you, and I agree with your front three as well. But yeah, I'll go. Martinelli starts. I'll say Martinelli first scorer then, and I'll go 2-0 Arsenal. Fingers crossed. But I do think Luton are a good side. I think they could stay up, to be honest. I think they're a good side, and they caused a lot of trouble, and they've caused a lot of big teams a lot of trouble. So it's not one that we can take lightly. You can't take this one lightly. But boys, sorry for any little hiccups. At 45 minutes, we seem to be getting this internet hiccup where we stagger and stop for five minutes, and we're not really sure what to do with it. We're going to just basically create our own Zoom at this point. But we're at Purely Arsenal FP on Twitter. We're Purely Arsenal on YouTube. Subscribe to us there. We come out a little bit earlier there, our podcast, but then we're also on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you can give us a review there, that'd be great. And you can find us at Purely Arsenal FP on Twitter. Neil, James, thank you so much. Long way to go. Decent result, but let's go win the next one. Up the Arsenal.